Inside Lacrosse Podcast, the source of the sport.
What's up, D3 Nation? It's March and May Madness is right around the corner. So you know that we had to link and talk about all of this March Madness in the D3 lacrosse world. Caleb, how you doing, buddy?
Dan, doing well, man. So happy we could get together after a crazy, crazy weekend that we just had. I mean, that was one of the more memorable weekends I can remember in a while. So happy to be on here with you rapping about it and can't wait to break it down.
And we appreciate everybody who is tuning in here for Inside the Crosses D3 podcast. I am your host, Dan Kaplan, and with me, as always, is the big dog, Caleb Abney, a pair of 2016 York alums who love kicking it and talking lax. Let's get right into it. You mentioned it. It was a loaded slate, a huge weekend of ball. I understand that before we do, though, you have been given a formal scolding, should we call it? A formal, let's just call it right what it is, a scolding that we haven't given any type of Baltimore Swarm updates up to this point. So the floor is yours. Please fill everyone in on exactly what's going on the inner business at Baltimore Swarm Incorporated.
Yeah, I know it's a hot topic that the people love to hear. They've been asking about it, so gotta deliver. Baltimore Swarm, we're doing well. For those who are new to the show, maybe don't know, it's the club team that I coach and have a lot of fun with the boys there. Still coaching the first ever Swarm high school team. So they're all making their high school teams now. Super excited about that. So looking forward to catching some games. Maybe you'll see a couple when you're checking out the high school stuff as well. And then I'm also coaching the seventh graders, which are 31s at this point, which is just crazy to say. But so just starting off with them, we were supposed to have our first practice tonight, but Maryland weather, it's snowing in March, so we had to push that to Wednesday. But we'll get our first practice in this week and can't wait to kick it out with those boys. Should be a lot of fun.
Love that. I did get to catch your team live in action already, so I assume that I'll be able to catch them in the future again as well. And if you could, please try and avoid from having to throw fisticuffs in the middle of the field with your squad at our events. That would be greatly, greatly appreciated.
Sometimes the boys need to learn a tough lesson, I'm not afraid to be the hard coach from time to time.
Well, I hope that you were the hard coach after they were, can we call it lacking discipline?
There was maybe a little bit of lack of discipline, but we went home with the memory of going hard against that team in the last game. We made it that one goal game, and I think that was the highlight of my boys' fall, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I love that. All right, well, let's shift back into spring and college, and specifically the Division III ranks. Loaded slate, really fun weekend. RIT, Salisbury, Wesleyan, 2, 4, and 6 all go down. Gotta love that chaos. When we put together preseason rankings, we're putting together a list that ultimately we love all just to watch it completely unfold and get torn apart by the action, which we would have it no other way. We wouldn't be able to predict the world of Division III if we had a crystal ball that was as clear as day, because that's just exactly how the world goes. So with all that said, I'll turn it over to you and let you guide us through the bulk of the conversation here, and I'm excited to chime in and do some analysis as I have taken the keys to watching as much as possible.
Yeah, you're the expert here. So you want me to just go through real quick? We could stop where we feel is necessary and really dive into those a bit more.
Let's hit ranks. And then we can recap. Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to talk rankings or recap the action first?
Let's talk some rankings. I think that'll be a good start, and then we can kind of segue into the action from there.
All right, all yours.
Perfect. All right, Tufts number one. I think we don't need to say too much on that. They're starting off hot. They're rolling. Nezcak's starting to get into full swing finally, and they're doing what they do. Number two, CNU. I again, we'll talk about it maybe a little bit later. I think they have to be number two right now, just they're undefeated and real solid. But they really haven't sold me too much at being a top-tier team that could maybe go head-to-head with Tufts. We are going to see it in the Mustang Classic in a couple weeks, so really looking forward to that matchup. But do you have any further thoughts on CNU? No, we got to put them at two, but you feel strongly about that?
Yeah, I think the resume is one that, like, you know, you can't deny, right? 7 wins at this point, some good ones under the belt, right? That said, there have been some question marks that make you say, like, you know, maybe there are some holes. And yeah, we'll get into that, like you said, but I'll let you keep going for now.
Yeah, good call there. Bowdoin 3, again, Nezcak in full swing. Not too much to go off of, but they seem to be pretty top dogs. We'll go right here at 4-5, Lynchburg-Salisbury. Insane game on Saturday. You know, first time Salisbury's lost in the regular season in a couple years now. And just a masterclass in coaching, I think, by Kadelka. Did some crazy stuff. But I think that's why we have the Lynchburg 4. Got to put them right ahead of above Salisbury there, but still a top 5 team in Salisbury. I think I couldn't agree with you more there, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting thing. Like, I'll pose this question to you. How do you, and I know that you have a top 20 list because I needed it to help create mine. How do you go about personally the balance between, like, your preseason list and preconceived notions that aren't just guesswork, right? It's based off of a combination of what comes back, what coaches were thinking, what coaches thought about their own team, what coaches thought about their opponents, right? Like, one of the things that, like, always about rankings, especially at this point in the season, it's like everyone kind of does it differently, but I'll pose you this question. Like, how do you personally, and I know you have a top 20 ranking because I needed to see your perspective on things, but, like, how do you balance these early season results versus the preconceived notions of preseason rankings that, like, you know, are based on a combination of what we think, what we were able to gather from coaches, and, you know, returning talent, culture, all of those types of things that, like, you know, there's a history of and all of that. So, like, how do you balance the results of early season stuff versus all of that, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I think it's really hard. You see it a lot in, I feel like, college basketball, where there's so many different games played. It's a long season. And you have to obviously take the results and move forward with what you have, but at the same time, weight those and say, okay, you know, this was at home, this was away, there was so many multiple different factors going into it. So there's a lot of different things, and I think it's a really tough job. That's why they pay you the big bucks to do it, and I get to sit here and read the articles about what you think and say, wow, this guy's stupid.
No,
I'd never say that about you. But no, it's a big challenge. And just because we brought that up, I mean, talking about Salisbury's schedule in the preseason, they have this long stretch at home where they don't play again on the road until April. This was a weekend game, so it's not like you're dealing with class or different things going on. Like, this is a full weekend dedicated game. Lynchburg coming in, you know, they're a well-coached team. And Lynchburg just comes in and really seals the deal on them. So this one specifically, I feel like it's a huge, huge win for Lynchburg that you definitely have to give some weight to. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't say that this one game is an end-all, be-all, and I wouldn't say that Seagull Stadium is burning now because of this.
Yeah, and I feel like, and maybe we just hit CNU now before we get too far and forget, but, like, last week I even wrote it in the rankings. I was like, they're 5-0, I believe at the time, right? 5-0. But, like, there have been some question marks along the way. Like, they were tied, or it was a 1-goal lead, I believe, over Stevenson as they headed into the fourth quarter in that game. They were pretty tight with Gettysburg in the first half, blow them out in the second half, and, you know, really efficient offense, great shooting. Hampton-Sydney gave them some struggle, right? Like, it was a tighter game in the total end of the game margin. It was tight at the half. Like, so yeah, I mean, I think yes, 7-0 undefeated. We thought they were going to be good preseason. They brought a ton of talent back. Maybe haven't been as dominant as we expected, and maybe a little bit like, you know, content to win, not hungry to dominate. And, you know, like, I think, like we said, it's just so early to totally be able to tell. And, you know, content to win, but winning lots of games is, you know, still a recipe to, you know, win lots of games when you're talented and well-coached and all of the things that come with that and that we've seen and unfold 7 times so far this season. So, like, it's hard to be too critical, but at the same time, like, I don't think it's too big of a stretch to say, like, so much of the scoring comes from the attack and they've been in tighter games than maybe that you would think that they have would have been in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's very well said and a good summary of what it is, and I'll touch on it later, but honestly, I think this is a good thing for Salisbury. Like, if I'm a Salisbury Seagull fan, you know, you look at past years, I think that this is only going to add fuel to that fire and do what you said is it's going to make them hungry to dominate moving forward.
Well, I was talking about seeing you, but...
Oh, true. Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, I always got Seagulls on the mind. The Sky Rats.
Facts. All right, so next in the list is York. I think that's one thing that you could be looking at. And, like, some people do this exercise where you kind of move teams up if they don't lose. I think York was sixth going into this game, into this weekend, and then beat Kenyon, and now they're still at sixth. Like, I don't know that York deserves to move to four because Lynchburg beat Salisbury. That doesn't really make, you know, a ton of sense to me. I get the idea of, like, well, they were sixth, didn't lose, and 2 and 4 did, so therefore they should move up 2 spots. I guess I get that, but at the same time, like, I'm not ready to call York a top 5 team and put them at 4 because Lynchburg went and beat Salisbury. So York stays at 6. And then you have the next version of it with Babson RIT. Babson going, beating RIT. That game was held at Union, so a neutral-ish site game. And yeah, that's one of the games that we're going to break down. So we're going to break down 3 games. Obviously, there were a ton that... you know, we could get into. We're going to really dive in on Lynchburg beating Salisbury, Babson beating RIT, and Bates beating Wesleyan. Another one of those big upsets that, you know, kind of really shook up the rankings this week.
Yep, and we'll keep it moving here. I think Gettysburg 9, that's a really good spot. They've been in some tight ones and some ones that they probably were tight, could have won, but didn't end up getting over that hill. But they've beaten everybody they should, so I think 9's a good landing spot for them. W&L, they've played some really good games. Keeping them at 10, I think, is good. The York game, obviously, was a real close one, so for keeping York up at 6, I think W&L at 10 is a very solid spot, too. Stevens Dickinson at 11 and 12, I think both of those are very good spots. Dickinson still kind of riding the high from last year. Had some tight ones here and there, but so far they've held pretty steady, so I think that 12 spot's good. And then the next kind of big one that here that we have, the big shakeup, St. John's Fisher 13 and then St. Lawrence 14. Dan, talk about how you got them at 13 and 14 here.
Yeah, I think that is a weird grouping there between Cortland, St. John Fisher, St. Lawrence. St. Lawrence holding serve and beating Cortland at home in a tight one that came down to the wire. And then turning around and losing to St. John Fisher, who was ranked below all of them, right? Cortland was previously going into that ranked the highest of those three. That becomes a bit of a weird triangle to kind of sort out. Of those three, the only team that didn't lose is St. John Fisher. So I guess they go above the other two. Particularly St. Lawrence, which then St. Lawrence and Cortland, like, I don't know. Again, now we're back to, like, well, what do you kind of think preseason? And I still think Cortland is good. I still think, like, you know, and to your point of, like, not all wins are created equally, not all losses are created equally. Like, Cortland takes a 1-goal loss on the road midweek to St. Lawrence, right? Like maybe, you know, there's something to that that is worth stating as well. So, I think Cortland is big, strong, athletic, physical. I think they're one of the teams that, you know, can really, make some noise deep and late in the season because of that, right? I think they're pretty versatile. So I think Cortland's pretty good. St. John Fisher is making us look smart right now, right? I think we were the only group to rank them preseason, particularly giving them benefit of the doubt after losing so much from last year. Lost a ton of guys to graduation, so shout out to those guys for coming in hungry and ready to take some spots and you know, fill some voids. And then I think we also last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, but last year, mostly last year, went on like a long tangent about how Coach Dobbins, I think, is one of the best in the game right now. He's consistently turned around some really good teams. They've had some really good talent come through there and some really impressive teams. And then they've graduated guys and everyone has kind of predicted the fall off. And he just keeps keeping them around and keeping them, you know, really competitive. And so shout out to Coach Dobbins. I think that those guys are consistently doing the right things up there. There's a bunch of Cardinals in Division III lacrosse. They're one of them. So, yeah, Fisher, Cardinals. But yeah, a weird grouping there. And I'm excited to get more data points on all of those teams and continue to kind of watch that unfold. And, you know, again, I kind of come back to like Cortland probably ends up as the highest ranked of that group by the end of the season, if I'm a betting man.
Yeah. Yeah, good point there. And like you said, Cortland 15. Talking about another Cardinal at 16, we got Wesleyan.
Nice transition there, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
That one's tough. Wesleyan. Yeah. Is one of the victims of in all three of those games that I mentioned earlier, like Salisbury going down, RIT going down, Wesleyan going down. All three of them are victims of hot goalies. And in this case, not only is Wesleyan the victim of a hot goalie, but also the victim of a cold goalie on their own side. So right there, like if you just flip those and it kind of regresses to the norm and even like a norm, like even just a little bit, for both of those guys, then maybe you're looking at a different game. I watched that game. I digested it pretty well. I think Wesleyan has a lot going for them, despite feeling like, you know, down in the dumps after you lose your home opener or lose an opener, to kick things off and to at home as well. So, yeah, I think that 16 is probably a good spot. They dropped from 6 to 16 after that loss. We've ranked through 30 publicly. I personally, on our list, and you can vouch for me for this if anybody calls me out, personally rank through 40 so that we can then rank through 30 and continue to kind of track it as we go. To be able to do 30 with confidence, I think you have to consistently rank 40. And so we had Bates in the 30 to 40 range. And so now this becomes like 6 loss to a team that was between 30 and 40 and now moves to 16. And that team that was between 30 and 40 and Bates will move way up. In this case, very strong case for 20. And that's one of the things that we'll talk about, in a bit here is the case for 20. And, you know, that is ultimately one of the hardest decisions that goes into every one of these rankings. And I probably stew over it a little bit too much, to be honest.
Yeah. It's a tough job, especially when you get down in the muck here between, you know, 15 and 20, it's a really tough job.
Yeah. And that's why everyone's just subject to my opinion at that point, pretty much.
Exactly. Yeah.
At least at this point in the season.
As for now. Yep. So we'll round it out here. RPI comes in 17. Amherst starting up with the NESCAC play. They get into 18. Swarthmore comes in at 19, followed by F&M, who's played some really good ball, finishes up at 20. I know I've been pretty hard on F&M past few years at this point, but I think this year it's pretty well deserved that they've been playing some good lacrosse and should deserve that top 20 spot.
We also should say right now that this is Monday night. Rankings come out Tuesday morning. If Bates is in that 20th spot, it wouldn't shock me. Kind of similar to what we did earlier with Babson overtaking RIT, Lynchburg overtaking Salisbury. I think like we have to reward the big wins. If we're rewarding those other big wins, I think we also have to reward Bates. Even if we don't have them completely flipping in the rankings for Bates to overtake them, I think that that's at least worth considering. And yeah, I think that ultimately one of the, like we said, one of the toughest things is consistently getting to the end of that line and being like, okay, here's who I think is around that like 20 to 25 range and what's the final outcomes. And it's like, okay, F&M I think has a pretty significant case. They just beat Ohio Wesleyan. Grove City was there in the previous ranking, partially because of that win. Now F&M has the same win and in a more, you know, significant way because it didn't take overtime to do it. So I think F&M is in a spot where like they have an argument to overtake Grove City there. Middlebury lost 12-9 to Bowdoin, but has been in that consideration for some significant time. I don't see putting them in after a loss, even though it was, you know, a pretty close loss to a team that we think is, you know, pretty good. So, I think that that's just like, you know, continue to watch category, right? And I believe it was 9-4 heading into the fourth quarter. So props to them for continuing to fight. And then Bates, right? Like Bates now has that win over Wesleyan. That's then the best win out of anybody in this group. I think that holds significant weight, just like we mentioned with those other teams that then got big boosts. And then your boys, Denison, right? I think Denison was in. If you're in the business of like, you know, upsets happen, how much weight do you hold over all of them? Then maybe you don't punish them as much for that Elmhurst loss as someone else might. And then overtime with WNL, who we think is a pretty good team. And you have some notes that we'll get into. You believe in Denison as well still. So
I'm still a Dragon fan. Yeah.
They're not the Dragons, but I love it. But yeah, so I think that that's kind of the way that I see the end of those rankings. RPI and Amherst, I think, are two teams that both won but moved down slightly. I just haven't been super impressed by RPI's resume so far this season. Middlebury RPI this weekend is – or this week, I believe, is a Wednesday game. That's kind of a winner gets in or winner stays in situation. I think if Middlebury beats RPI, that's a clean, easy swap there. Amherst was in a 5-5 or 5-4 game, really low scoring with Hamilton headed into the fourth quarter. I haven't watched a ton of that. Again, we're recording earlier than we typically do, so I haven't quite got to as much digesting as I typically would, but feel pretty good about, you know, getting through the rankings in general. So yeah, I think that's kind of how it all pans out and where I sit on all of it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good breakdown. Love the thought process in there, and I think you described your thoughts pretty well. So can't really argue with anything that you have. I'm sure people will argue with you about it, but in the meantime, it is what it is, and you're gonna have to take it.
One argument I'd accept is that Swarthmore is underranked. I could see that. But again, we'll continue to let things play out.
Yeah, that's why we play the season and do it. So I love it. You want to get into the heavy hitters from this weekend now?
I do. Yeah. I'm ready for you.
Yeah, there was some good stuff. So loving the chaos, 2, 4, and 6 all go down in the same day on the weekend. It's incredible. Before we get into the big ones, we have to just touch that WNL narrowly survives my Denison guys and OT, which was just a fabulous game. I'll talk about Denison a little bit. Still have really high hopes for them. I think the Red Devils are going to be pretty solid here moving forward. Still not Devils? Oh no. What are they? Yeah, you got it. They're just big red, right? They're just red. That's not even a mascot. That's lame. Give me something. Oh man.
You're right.
Either way, we'll get into the weekend. Let's start with the biggest one that's on everyone's mind. Lynchburg Salisbury goes to 14-11. Lynchburg wins it pretty handedly. Just a quick notes about some stats. Riley Hastings for Lynchburg, 3 goals, 1 assist, led them in scoring. Liam Hoffman and Will Rubley both had 3 points. And then, as always, a goalie. I love it. Eric Allen was eating things up with 15 saves in the goal, just not really giving Salisbury much to work with. Dan, you really digested this whole thing. I was a watching it a little bit on the golf course. Then I drove home, had it up on the phone, so I was taking it all in live in person. But you really broke down this film. So tell me what led to this big Lynchburg dub.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like I was really surprised. I told you beforehand, like I thought Salisbury would handle him. You know, tons of credit to Lynchburg, tons of credit to the Hornets coaching staff, tons of credit to their guys for coming down and really executing. And I think one of the things that, like, in a lot of these South on Salisbury matchups, right? So like teams that play them a ton, Lynchburg, York, Gettysburg, CNU's, you know, X, that's kind of the group that most comes to mind right now. Historically WAC, right? But like there is a composure and, you know, kind of an intimidation factor that you have to overcome. And Lynchburg, like it was never even like a slight factor in this matchup. They never for once like seemed intimidated, and not only that, like they didn't shy from any of the pressure or like shy away from any ground balls or 50-50s or like opportunities where there's going to be a collision or anything like that. Like they kind of took it to them in those situations. Like they more than did not shy away. Like I think one of the things that you kind of think about when it comes to that is like composure and like handling pressure. And they didn't just handle it. Like, they beat it. Like, they attacked the pressure. They went right at it. And, you know, again, deserve a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, let me ask you one question here. They kind of flipped the script, too, and did what Salisbury does to a lot of teams, or maybe not even that, but they triple pull, which we always talk about Salisbury. Their attack is that monster that you really got to focus on. They make the wheels churn on that offense. And to bring some poles up and really pressure the fielders as a coach, like what sort of advantage, disadvantage did that give Lynchburg in this game?
Yeah, you throw me off here. I was going to go to the other side of the ball first, but that's okay.
Sorry.
Yep. So I again, you asked about the triple pole
that Lynchburg like, did on
right. So yeah. They're doing it just to get matchups right, like. Salisbury, a lot of their offense is based off of midfield dodges that create leverage and get you spinning so that attackmen off ball can like slide and work and fill space and cut, and you have to fill down. And if you're filling down, then maybe you're leaving midfielders open and, you know, so on and so forth from there. And so they did a really good job of getting those guys up and getting into it as much as possible. I think that's one of the things that's the most difficult when you're going to like literally triple pull the midfield. And so get both of your short six down guarding attackmen and two close defensemen up guarding midfielders with your LSM is what we're referring to with that triple pull. And it's not super conventional, right? And it's tough to get actually into it. And so from the details of executing that, I thought they did a good job of that and communicating through it and getting your matchups and all of those types of things. And then they did a great job of making it count, right? Like poles held matchups. Short sticks, when they got involved in pick play, did a good job of getting skinny and letting guys get through so that they could hold those matchups. Midfielders above it did a really good job of denying topside and keeping guys down the alley and just playing tight, good man-to-man cover defense with those poles and, you know, playing with confidence and then not overhelping from there. And then all of it, and he's my definite player of the game, is Eric Allen in goal. 15 saves, and saves from everywhere, total variety of them. Saves on the run, saves where they're contested shooters, saves on step downs, saves in tight, like everything that you would have asked for. He won a couple end lines, like picking off, or at least, you know, being active around the crease, those types of things. Like, I thought he was the biggest difference maker. And when you're going to play defense like that, like we're going to triple pull and we're going to give up savable shots, like you are then at that point, like the total backbone of the game plan as well. And so to me, I think that he was like the very clear player of the game. Salisbury gets two looks, pretty late in the game, like hands-free, clean looks, right-handed shooters from the right wing at good distance with good angle. And he doesn't just save them, like, he gobbles them up. Totally clean saves, offside high, like, punch it, take it away, clean, and we're looking and getting out the other way. And so I thought he was extremely impressive, like, totally shot up the radar for me. Didn't know much about him coming into the season. He wasn't the starter last year. So, you know, a real statement there in net from Eric Allen.
Yep, there always will be a solid goalie in Lynchburg there. And then, yeah, go to it now. Talk about that Lynchburg offense, which 14 goals against the studs on Salisbury's defense there is pretty impressive.
Yeah, so again, I think you mentioned it earlier, a taste of their own medicine a little bit, in the sense that, like, Salisbury is also very much so like the type of team that'll double Bolia, that'll get matchups where they want, hold matchups as much as possible, hedge adjacent, kind of eat some space and make Dodgers think twice about if that is actually open. But ultimately, they're going to ride the wave and kind of get back with their own guy. And Lynchburg, they don't shy away from just dodging the poles, right? Like, Riley Hastings does a really good job of creating leverage, whether it's from X or, like, on the right wing. Liam Holman does most of his work above the goal on the lefty wing. Like, but again, like, creates leverage and puts a ton of pressure on. And, you know, they are guys that are striking for unassisted goals. Spencer Vandenberg gets short a lot, and has no problem just, like, attacking his short stick and going by him. And he's kind of one of the only guys that, like, they actually slid to and were supporting. And then he did a good job of just, like, getting the ball out of his stick and making the good decisions. And sometimes that meant just throwing the ball to Riley Hastings. And then he was able to attack opposite through X and, you know, kind of put that defender in a tough spot when he's on the pipe of, you know, there's a low angle dodge that's happening. Do I help and then therefore show off of X and give them that potential drift? Or do I stay home? And if I stay home, is he going to get under and score himself? Right. And so that's kind of a little bit of a difficult spot. And Lynchburg did a good job of picking on that. And Riley Hastings did a really good job of creating and scoring out of it. I think, again, it just was a total team approach, a total team effort everywhere, but especially on offense, sharing the rock, lots of different guys going at it, everybody winning matchups, doing it with poise. I thought super, super, super well played on that end of the ball. And again, it just comes from, like, Lynchburg Dodgers weren't scared at all of matchups. They were going by guys and had no problem turning the corner and scoring goals.
Yep. You gotta be confident when you're down in Salisbury, and I think Lynchburg and the Hornets really approved that there. Any other notes that you want to take from this game? Salisbury, I think, did do pretty good at the faceoff X. If you want a positive takeaway for Salisbury, looks like you were probably about to hit that maybe.
Uncanny. Your ability to say something that I'm going to reject.
Reject. Love it. Okay.
You're right. The number did end up better, right? I think it was 17 of 24 that Salisbury finished at. No, 29. Right.
Yeah, numbers are hard. I'm terrible.
17 and 12 is 29, not 25. So, yeah, 17 and 29 and 12 and 29. So Salisbury does end up edging it out and gets better there. But one of the keys that I think that, you know, kind of fed into exactly what we're talking about, like gaining some early confidence, having some early success, your goalie's seeing the ball well, and your faceoff guy is doing well at the X. He played those numbers ended up in a fine spot, but early in the game, Melampi struggled. Yes, it ended up being okay. But also, like, if your guy is actually the first teamer, like, you probably want a little bit more. You want a hotter start. Maybe that's being picky, but I don't think so. But again, yeah, he ends up winning the match up there and ends up doing, you know, enough to say, like, you know, I probably wasn't the problem, but he also wasn't, you know, I mean, they didn't win, so he wasn't why they won, right?
Yeah, no, and I think you could probably say the same about the goalie play. I think Swatkowski, or I think that's how you say his last name.
Santowski,
excuse me. But I think, you know, he played all right. He had a lot, I think he had 11 saves, somewhere 13. Around there. 13, okay, so he definitely was seeing the ball, got some good ones, but Like you said, they scored a lot of unassisted goals, which I think is as a goalie, you're really locked in on the shooter, the guy with the ball. So if the ball's not really moving and you're missing shots like that, those are ones that you hope as a team defense that your goalie can pick up, get up and out. And he just missed a few of those there that I think could have gotten them back into the game.
And two low angle goals that Lynchburg scores that I thought, I don't want to put it all. I'm very anti blame the goalie.
No.
So,
it's never the goalie's fault. There were two low angle goals. Always on the goalie when you win big. So
correct. But two low angle goals that I thought, big goalie probably just like be a little more still and let's hold that pipe. And you're a big goalie. What do you think? Stay still on the pipe, if you got scored on near pipe on like a righty that drove up the left hash and then turned, and it wasn't really a question mark, but kind of a post up with your right hand.
Yeah, you got to be holding the pipe on that one. That one's on you.
Yeah. All right. So I think that says it. That does it. I think again, like the other factor beyond faceoffs, and this is like the ultimate point that I think that is like, probably why Lynchburg wins this game. And it was the non-50. It was the 50-50 non-faceoff ground balls. So like Lynchburg loses the faceoff count by 5, but wins the total ground ball count by 6 or 7. So that tells you like in non-faceoff ground balls, like there was a pretty significant edge. And then I'll add to that and say even a couple that they lost, they were able to just swarm right back. So like a Salisbury pole picks up a contested ground ball and they're not able to get it out because as soon as he picks it up, there's 3 or 4 Lynchburg guys that are just like swarming to it and putting it back on the ground and hounding them, right? And so there were a couple of instances of things like that as well. And then one big play to me that I thought like kind of summarizes it, it leads to Lynchburg's 8th goal, and it was a goal that tied the game. But it's a play around midfield, and Salisbury attackmen are doing a great job and hustling and fight back and get into the play. And a Salisbury attackman hits a Lynchburg player. I think it was Liam Holman. So hits Liam Holman, like lays him out. Really good, clean hit from the front, ground ball, just contested hit, puts him down. And then the scrap for the ground ball continues. Holman gets up from getting laid out and ends up picking the ground ball up and clears it on his own. And like Salisbury was right there, was playing hard, but just couldn't quite make the play. Lynchburg kid is tough enough and like instinctual enough to get hit, get up, find the ground ball, pick it up, clear it himself. And that ends up going like finding its way to the back of the net. Right. And so like huge play. And I think kind of summarizes that aspect of things that it was like Lynchburg got a lot of those types of plays to go their way. And it went, it paid dividends.
Yep. Yeah, very well said. I'll talk about Salisbury a little bit moving forward here in our further segments, but we'll keep this moving to our second huge game of the weekend, and we'll get into the Babson upset over RIT 16-12. Absolutely loved this one. Huge offensive output here from Babson. They completely blew up, and it's all on Joey Allen. I think he was the straw that stirred the drink this week. 8 points on 5 goals, 3 assists. Did some dominating stuff. And then Camden Matthews as well. 3 goals, 1 assist there. Great, great offensive output. They had 11 players total with points, which is just, a true team effort. And then apologies, I'm going to mess this name up too. It's my thing. So if you're new to the pod, get used to it. Andrew Almquist. That's a very hockey name. I like that. I like that a lot.
That name screams hockey to you?
It does. I guess it reminds me of Lundqvist, which is a famous hockey goalie.
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Totally. All right.
Give me that vibe.
I was
going to
be critical, but I won't. Not at all. I actually love that.
Yep. But
Lynchburg fans that hear us going from talking about pro Lynchburg to then talking about Babson and the first name you'd say is Joey Allen are in a weird world right now because Joey Allen – is a transfer from WNL. And so not only that, Not only was he kind of the straw that stirs the drink, as you alluded to, 8 points, 5 goals, 3 assists, in that type of a game. So really impressed with his ability, you know, to kind of come in and mesh and, you know, work within that offense. And I thought he was incredible. I watched a good bit of this game. They offensively just like catch fire. It's one of those times that, like, you know, you can think back to when you're playing or coaching and, like, you know, your team is just in the zone and your bench is hooting and hollering and all the energy is flying around. And it's like everything you guys are doing is working. Like every shooter is just absolutely tagging corners. Like it is just like what the kids calling these days, like genuine flow state. And Babson was in it. And so like 9-6 as it hits the half, I'm like, all right, I got to turn this on. And so for those who don't know, like my game days, my typical like 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. or beyond, honestly, 10 p.m. really, on a Saturday game day is like very much so loaded with scoreboard duty. And so I and do my very best to watch as much as possible alongside keeping the IL scoreboard as up to date as possible. And so obviously by virtue of that, you're very aware of scores as they're going on and like playing out. And so I kept looking at this and kept watching it. And, you know, ultimately at 9-6, throw it on and I watched the whole second half. And again, yeah, I don't have a whole ton to add other than like it felt like everybody that Babson played was like, you know, splitting to either hand and like tagging corners, off ball. All of their action was like really timely. They did a good job of setting seals for shooters and, you know, cutting off of it. And, you know, like I said, the timing of everything was just really well orchestrated, and some good shooters in there. And Joey Allen, I think, is super talented, and we've known his game for a while. Camden Matthews is another returner, had 3 goals and an assist in this game. Really good shooter, like just can fill it up. And so I think that Babson offense is loaded with studs. And then they had a really strong day at the X, right? Like I think the world of Ethan Spillane for RIT. I think he's tough as hell and always scraps and, you know, gives his best. I don't think it was his greatest day. The freshman Phil Minardo from Del Barton got plenty of reps. He went 8 of 18. Just a freshman though, right? And so like kind of thrown into it. And so, you know, Babson has a solid day there, spread amongst 3 guys at the faceoff X and gets him plenty of possessions. I think one of the keys every time we've talked about, you know, what's a preview key to beating RIT, number one thing that I would tell you, you got to stay out of the box. You can't foul them. They're so good. Can't give them hands free. Giving Canadians that are used to playing box hands free in a field goal is just a death sentence. And so they really didn't foul them. I think it was just one penalty, and then they get the 21 saves on top of it. And I think for RIT, like, this is sort of what we talked about preseason with them, is like, you know, we give them benefit of the doubt because they're them and they're going to be well coached and they're going to have tons of talent underneath of it. But like RIT from a scheme aspect is really unique. So if you have young guys that are playing, you kind of got to get them schooled up. And one thing that sticks out to me is a sequence where RIT is known for these sub games where, you know, you get one thing going on and a short stick D mid is sprinting to the midline, and meanwhile the pole is starting their games and those types of things. And in this exact situation, you had a short stick D mid and an LSM both doing it basically in sequence and on the same plane, and they both break to go to the midfield line and both break back and both have a step on their guy, but the feeder can't throw it to either of them because they're both like kind of almost guarding each other, right? And there's just not quite the like same type of organization to all of the RIT like sub games and scheme that they, you know, throw at you. And it just kind of, it didn't seem quite like the same group that we're used to seeing, because it isn't the same group that we're used to seeing. And it's a lot of new faces, but I still, you know, remain on this in the camp of like, they'll figure it out. And it's a talented group that you know, I'm not too concerned about yet. And yeah, I think really good game. Babson caught fire again. Like if you are into offense, I would find some time to try and track down some film of that game. And it was a fun watch from that perspective, for sure.
Definitely. So you talked about it a little bit. Do you think this is a quicker fix for RIT, or is this going to be something that's going to be season long, where they maybe struggle to get in, where they're not going to struggle to really get into the playoffs, but do you see them struggling late in the season, or do you think they figure it out in the next month or so?
Yeah, I think they'll figure it out in the next month or so. Gotcha. But yeah, it's so interesting, because when you have all the young guys, like you kind of have fresh slates to mold, but at the same time, like, you're going to go through some growing pains. And so, you know, it could be one of those things that's similar to you were saying about Salisbury, how, like, you know, maybe this is actually a really good thing for them in the end, if it's going to, then if this is what needed to happen for some young guys to realize, like, okay, we do need to, you know, be a little more open-minded to all of these points that coach is trying to hammer home, or, like, you know, I don't know exactly how it all plays out, but maybe that is ultimately one of the good, maybe this is a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Good call. Anything else on this game before we move on?
Nah, nothing else here.
Cool. We'll get going. The last big one we had on Saturday, which was the Bates upset over Wesleyan, 13-11. What do we call this? The birdcage? In the birdcage?
Wasn't in the birdcage. The birdcage is their grass field. This was just
that's right. That's right. Cage. Maybe they should play every game on the birdcage then, because I feel like they dominate up in the cage.
It feels like a April, May type of thing later in the warmer days, but
gotcha.
I'm with you.
Makes sense, yeah. But yeah, so in this game you had Connor Hartman. He had 4 goals for Bates. Charles Lowe, 1 goal, 3 assists for a total of 4 points. And then, like you alluded to in the beginning, another hot goalie with Andrew Totland, 20 saves on the day for Bates. Out of his mind. In just incredible stuff. I love hot goalie play, so seeing a stat line like that just gets me fired up. Love that. So Dan, what'd you see from this one here?
Yeah, and then also I'll add, similar to what we were saying with, like, specialty play early, Bates, ton of face-off success early that allowed them to kind of dictate some early possessions and continue to stack some goals and, you know, get into a rhythm offensively. And yeah, I think let's start with Bates. I was really impressed with a couple of things defensively. I think they play lots of guys that are maybe a little undersized but play with an edge, have great sticks, smart kids, and so you're able to kind of jump in and out of man and play some zone, and again, like, good sticks and kids that are, you know, playing with a ton of energy and a chip on their shoulder, and again, maybe a little undersized, but it just didn't seem to really manifest, you know, in too significant of a way, and smart kids, and so I think that was, you know, an impressive aspect of things is just how competitive they were, and, you know, that they played with a real chip on their shoulder on that side of the ball. Offensively, lots of good shooters, kids that can really pull it. And so, again, we mentioned goalie play and having a hot goalie. Wesleyan had a cold goalie, right? So start that with 1 save on 8 goals allowed, I believe was the official statistic in that, before a change was made. And so you get totally different stories there, totally different pictures, where if that, you know, like we said earlier, just kind of regresses to the norm a little bit, maybe you don't have too much of a disparity. And so in the first half, you have 5 face-off wins and 1 save, which that's not a great recipe for any type of success. Like I said, I'd start with Bates and then started bouncing all over. But again, I think those are definitely interesting factors of it. Very different goalie play. Little
thing in there too, real quick, just about Connor Selfridge. I mean, you brought up that it's a tough stat line for him. Definitely agree there. I've been there myself plenty of times. So just something to say. You can't let this one performance define you, and I don't think he is. He's been a great goalie in the past. He's definitely proven that he can lead a defense that is on a top-tier team like this. So I think he's just got to get back out there, get that confidence back up, get that team back feeling confident in him. which I feel like he has the talent to do. So don't think this is going to define him. It's just a blip on the radar.
Totally. Super well said. And then I'll add extra man, right? EMO was a big factor in this one. Bates goes 3 for 5. Wesleyan fouling 5 times. It's like, you know, you're giving them extra possessions or giving them more opportunities for those good sticks and those good shooters to be slinging the ball around. And it's 5 less opportunities that you have yourself. And so I think that, you know, that's one aspect of it. And then Wesleyan went man up 4 times and only scored on 1 of them. So if you're able to kind of, you know, connect in a couple more of those situations and even that playing field as well, I think that's one more thing that you're looking at. I mentioned, like, not hitting the panic button for Wesleyan. They took over 50 shots in this game and generate a ton. Playing big, strong, athletic kids in the midfield, like 23, 25, 1, 15, like, all those guys can really go. Will Miller, I thought, was really impressive. He came in with, you know, plenty of notoriety and was a preseason, you know, notion kid and all of those types of things, and showed that in that first game. And again, I think that they definitely add to that. And yeah, I don't think that there's a ton of panic button there outside of, like, let's get goalie play right, let's get face-offs right. And I guess if you're in the boat of, like, we can't get those things right, maybe you're hitting the panic button. But outside of that, it felt like there was plenty to like. You know, Wesleyan runs that zone that, you know, obviously has become, you know, famous at this point. And to Bates' credit, they were plenty prepared for it and, you know, kind of shoot you out of it. And we're really good in that aspect of things. And then as soon as Wesleyan went man, Bates was shot out of a cannon and, like, attacking with speed and all those types of things. And so, yeah, I think a lot to build on if you're Bates and a lot if you're Wesleyan to be like, all right, you know, things aren't, you know, we're not in total catastrophe mode as it may feel.
Yeah. Yep. Just goes to show how important specialty play is with face-off goalies, things like that. They can really, really make a break a team. And I think we saw it this past weekend, but really good game. Really happy for Bates and the trajectory that they're on. Anything else on this?
No, I think that's probably what I got. Yeah, I guess the other thing I'd add is, like, Wesleyan's down and fights back. So, like, I think, again, if you're looking for, like, takeaways from Wesleyan perspective in the positive realm, that's one of them. And for Bates, it's like you withstood that punch. And I'll also add the same thing for Lynchburg, right? Like, Lynchburg goes up and has a ton of momentum and things are going their way. Salisbury battled back and actually took a lead. They were leading that game 7-6. And then Lynchburg totally withstands that punch and throws their own punch back, right? And same thing here. Bates withstands that Wesleyan punch and it gets to 11-10. And then Bates scores 2 more goals to make it 13-10 before Wesleyan scores 1 more to kind of round things out. But again, like, kind of withstanding that run and ultimately taking that punch and instead of continuing to just get punched, throwing one back and landing the win, I think is, you know, probably two things that both of those teams are able to take and put their own spin on it in a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very hot stuff. Love it there. You want to talk about WNL surviving Denison at all, or you want to get to some other big games that we've seen this so far this year?
Yeah, so we'll run through and kind of quick hit some of those other games that were just crazy and fun and all those types of things that have happened so far this season. WNL Denison is the last of the big hitters from this weekend. I haven't digested this one the same way that I have those other three, so I don't know a ton about it. I did look through the box score, and I did obviously catch the game winner and a couple of highlights along the way. And so I'll quickly say, like, Luke Caldwell is a future stud, a developing superstar in the Division III world. He's a freshman from New Jersey. He had 7 points in this game, 5 goals, 2 assists. He's quick. He put a ton of pressure on in that York game as well. Creates a ton of leverage. He's great in the hang up, something that was getting under your skin in that York matchup. And again, this goal for the game winner against Denison comes out of the hang up again. Early in the year, we talked about James Haley in that preseason podcast. We talked about James Haley as like a great guy you can build a ton of offense around, like orchestrated all around him. And that has come to fruition as well. In this matchup, he had 2 goals, 3 assists for 5 points. So he's like definitely a creator, someone you can build around. And then what you have now is this freshman that is adding and being another threat that's a total dodging threat and like an unassisted scorer that if you're sliding to can kill you as well. So a future stud and one that I'm excited to continue to watch. And like we said, was very involved in that game. And, you know, with 7 points in general, but also had the assist on the game winner in overtime to James Mayer.
Yep. Yeah, tough one for the Big Red, but happy they fought back. I thought they showed a lot of fight, but yeah, really big one there. We can talk about some other ones here, go through some other stuff since we've started with the season here. One of the biggest ones to me was E-Town over Stevenson at Stevenson 20-19. crazy game. For those that don't know, they're down 19-13. Normal rule of thumb is a goal a minute. If you can get a goal a minute, you can still have a fighting chance to come back. And they're down 6 goals with 5 minutes left. So you do the math there. You think, well, this is probably a loss. E-Town doesn't think that way. They battle back all the way through. And one of those goals was just an insane heave from midfield that somehow finds its way. If you talk to Coach Childs, he'd probably be like, yeah, that's one Caleb would normally let in just because I let in weird shit like that all the time. But either way, definitely one that, you know, probably wants back. But E-Town battles back, finds a way to win it, and just a real statement win for E-Town there.
This was the craziest game I maybe have ever seen. Not just the craziest game, craziest ending, but the craziest game. 20-19 in overtime is insane. You have 39 goals in the game. It's ridiculous. And within it, you have a bunch of different runs. Like E-Town is up big in the game early. They go up, let's see, they go up 9-4 in that game. So they're taking it to them early. And then Stevenson wakes up and goes on their own like incredible run. They turn a 10-6 game into a 17-10 game. So they go on a ridiculous run themselves. And then while they're up 17-10, totally turn around and choke that. And it turns into an E-Town couple goal run. And then ultimately, like you said, like 19-13, with like 5:20 left. And then E-Town scores 6 goals in 5 minutes and 20 seconds. They score 2 goals in the final 21 seconds of the game. They score with 21 seconds, and then they score with 1 second on the clock as well. So, like, just an insane game of – it had 3 games within one game. It was, like, just the craziest thing that you ever will see. I'm watching it and I'm just like, and it's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, the entire time. I don't even know what to make of it at this point. Like, it's E-Town's only win of the season. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
And this isn't a bad Stevenson team. Like, they've played Gettysburg hard. They've played some other teams pretty good this year. So it's not like this was a down year for them.
They got smashed by Gettysburg. 16-12 sounds way better than it actually was. I watched it.
True. Okay.
It was 8-2 after the first quarter.
Oh, wow.
Stevenson only won 5 faceoffs in that game and did not get very good goalie play. That was a
There's the specialists again.
Catastrophe of a game for them.
Oh, so, man. Yeah. Wild stuff.
Not that I'm saying Stevenson is bad. I'm just saying. They did not play Gettysburg well.
Yeah. And if you want to go catch those highlights, go to the Inside Lacrosse Instagram. I know you guys have some videos from that. So scroll through, check that out. It was just some nuts stuff.
From the E-Town Stevenson game.
Yeah, from the the E-Town Stevenson. You have the half field heave. You got the overtime winner. So go check that out. Incredible clips. Awesome game. I'd probably say game of the year thus far, just with how crazy
easy it was. Game of the year. Easy game of the year. If there will not be another game better than that. I mean, there will not be a game crazier than that. There will not be a game crazier than that. Yeah. There may be, we may have a different game of the year, like a national championship that comes down to overtime or something like that. Like, got to give it to that. But we will not have a crazier game than that. We might not have another crazier game than that for another 10 years. How old are you?
Yeah.
We're 31. There may be, we may not be, we'll be 62 before we get a game like that again.
Yep. Oh, great.
All right, some others that are in that realm. Grove City, Owu, Overtime, Stu McLean, shout out Stu. We talked about wanting to play catch with him pregame. All those knee injuries, right? He's torn both ACLs, tore his meniscus in the fall. Like, awesome story. Grove City has detailed that on their Instagram as well, so shout out to that. Grove City has incredible media. They do a really good job. If you're interested in that story, go check that out as well. So shout out to Stu. Shout out to Grove City. Big win with that. That ultimately pushed them into the top 20 where they no longer sit. But, again, that was a very fun result and a big game and a fun game as well. W&L 14, Denison 10, or 13 overtime, just like we talked about. And then the other one, and this is the other game that, like, I just cannot believe, was Elmhurst 11, Denison 10, big dog.
Yeah.
You picked Denison to go to the Final Four, and they lost to Elmhurst.
I did.
Give me your instant reactions to finding that news out.
It was tough. It was a tough tough pill to swallow. I was quite shocked. But there was a team last year, right, that started off pretty slow, didn't do too hot in the beginning, and found their way. Am I wrong in that?
You are not wrong. They also similar color and started with the same letter.
Yeah, yeah. Some people even confuse the two. Not me. I would never do such a thing. But no, it's early season. Like we said, there's a lot of things that could go wrong. But I think they have the makeup for a team that can bounce back and figure out their way in the second two thirds of the season here.
You told me you're still a believer.
I am still a believer. And do you want to hear why?
Give me the case
for you.
Give me the case. Cause I'm not convinced.
Okay. Let me try to sell it out for you here. I'm a terrible lawyer. it's a good thing I'm not a lawyer, but if I was, you would not want me defending you. But if I were to be in defense here, I would tell you this: 78% on man up. They take the chances that they get, and they bury them when they get the opportunity. So you love to see that. Less than 2 minutes of penalties per game on average, which is a disciplined team. They got a lot of old heads, a lot of returners. They know what they're doing. They play clean, and they don't make too many mistakes in that front. Over 50% on the faceoff X. We talked about it. That's a very important aspect. Another important aspect of the specialty play is goalie play, where they're getting over 56% save percentage. So two very solid specialty plays, which I think leads to a lot of success moving forward in that. And then, like I said, a lot of returners. They got a long list of juniors, 10 seniors that lead the team. They get a lot of time. They really lead this team, and I think they show it with the disciplines and in the stats that they have. So am I worried about the Elmhurst loss and maybe a couple of these other tight ones? Yes. But do I think they can turn it around? 100%.
Okay. See, I think the most convincing argument for Denison is that among the most convincing, I think they're really well coached. I think Eric Koch is a good coach, has those guys detail oriented and dialed, and, you know, does a good job of game planning, does a good job of getting, you know, everybody kind of on the same page. You mentioned already not fouling. I guess that's a sign of discipline. I think maybe you're right. Elmhurst was more of a wake up than a death sentence for a well-coached team that has seniors and is pretty good specialty play. I just don't know how dynamic they are. I don't know how athletic they are. I don't know how much, you know, those types of things, but I guess the jury is still out, and they did just take W&L to overtime. So,
had
they won that game, are they, you know, are we crowning them and telling them back they're back and putting them in the, you know, top 20? And they were winning in that game 11-8 at some point. Like, W&L kind of has to dig deep to come back and win it. So, like, you know, maybe you're onto something.
Thank you. I'm much smarter than I look. Don't worry. Yeah.
All right. What other takes you have?
Oh yeah, I've been itching to get some takes. It's been a hot minute. I talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think Salisbury losing this weekend, as you know, as much as a former York guy likes to see that, I think this is the most dangerous position that Salisbury could be in as far as for the rest of the field. This gives me eerie 2023 vibes, which if you go back in the history book, they were 23-1, I believe, in that season, which their one loss was a late February, early March loss to Gettysburg by about 3 goals. Again, eerily similar to what happened this year. And then as soon as that happened, you know, they turn it on and they go to a different level just because they get that hunger. They get that desire that says, yes, they can be beaten and you have to go out and prove why you're Salisbury every single game. And I think we've watched a lot of Salisbury this year. They've played a lot of games early. They've played well. They've won, you know, every game up to this point, but they haven't had that domination factor that we normally see. So I think this is just fuel to the fire for Bergman. And it's something that we haven't seen in the past previous years. They've gone undefeated up until the tournament time, which I think leads them to be a little more overconfident than they probably should be, and has led to some weird fluky losses. I doubt we see that this year just because they've lost this one early.
Feels like a pretty strong take and very pro Siegel.
I'm a facts guy. I like the facts. I may be hard on him when it's deserved, but
you're a facts guy when you have them, and you're a vibes guy when you don't.
And I don't have them too often.
Speaking of being more of a vibes than a facts, tell me why you were so. You had to talk your gut out of voting St. Mary's into the top 20.
Yes, yes, they were right.
You wanted to do it. You wanted to.
They were in my initial draft.
You couldn't justify it. But yeah. I want to know why you wanted to do it so badly.
They're a fun team, man. Well coached. They take Lynchburg to a 3-goal game, which, you know, you can't scoreboard watch, but they – 4-goal game, excuse me. But you can't scoreboard watch. You know, every game is different and has different dynamics, so – There is that factor, but
okay, scoreboard watch. We've been scoreboard watching the entire.
I make my money off scoreboard watching. Yeah. But you can't fully rely on that. I mean, they win against E-Town, who we said, you know, beat Stevenson in one of the most craziest games in the year. And they're in the Lynchburg game really tight. I think they have a solid attackman in Gavin McKay. He's awesome. He does everything for them on offense. He's a lot of fun. And they just have some fun young guys that they're getting deep into their bench, and they get a lot of people. Carson Gianelli is one that really stands out to me. He scores a goal against Lynchburg. And he's, you know, great shooter, great dodger down the field. So I think just all in all, they're a fun, exciting team that's on the precipice of starting to do something pretty cool.
So you just want to be early to the party.
Exactly. Maybe it's not even this season. Maybe it's next season they take that next big step. But I think they're on to something right now.
Week 4, 2026. Yeah. Because in 2027, week 8, they've got a shot.
They're going to win the big one that week, and I'm going to be all over it.
Oh, man, I love it. I disagree with you too much. I don't see it as a top 20 team. We did have him in the top 30 in last week's extended rankings. So I do agree that they are trending in the right direction, and you know, maybe are a fun team and one that we gotta continue to watch over there on the Eastern Shore, I guess.
Yeah, I would
Southern
say
Southern Maryland. It's not Eastern Shore.
Yeah, they're on the water, so I think a lot of people confuse that.
Southern Maryland. We'll say Southern Maryland. That's just more appropriate term.
Good vibes down there all around.
Have a ton that aren't like team or game specific that I feel like, you know, we haven't hit through the course of rankings or anything like that. I guess a team that I'll say that I continue to like watching is Randolph-Macon. Fun group, play hard, play physical, do a lot of the little things. They are talented, but are also like just untalented enough that there's a lot of chaos, right? And so, like, I don't know. It's just a fun team to watch. And as hard as they play, it's not always the cleanest, but, you know, they're just a good group to watch and, you know, a fun team. And I continue to think that them being, you know, as good as they are is really fun for ODAC play, right? Between Randolph-Macon, Roanoke, Hampton-Sydney, WNL, Lynchburg, Bridgewater, like, you're just getting more teams that are, you know, kind of creating a little bit of, you know, uncertainty in the way that a AQ conference is going to totally unfold that you don't always not know, right? Like, it historically has come to Hampton, Sydney, Roanoke, WNL, Lynchburg pretty consistently. So for Macon to be able to kind of insert themselves, and this is a year where actually preseason ODAC coaches poll had Randolph-Macon at third, right? So above Roanoke and Hampton, Sydney. So definitely a team that, like, you know, is gaining more than just our eyeballs, but, you know, respect from around the country as well.
Yeah, the NESCAC of the South, most are saying.
Everyone says that.
Yep.
So Macon, you hit St. Mary's. I guess one thing that I'm not really a take, but I'm just looking forward to it, is Tufts CNU is a now looking like number one versus number two at the Mustang Classic.
That'll I'll be awesome.
On the call for that game.
Oh, so, you always get the big games, man.
I know. I you know, very lucky to be in that situation. So yeah, that's looking like it will be a total banger. And one that I'm, you know, really excited for.
Excited for you to be on that call.
All right, let's keep it moving. Let's continue to kind of go on that theme of looking ahead, except we'll limit it to this week. And this midweek slate, we kind of have a handful of bangers, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This week's going to be great. Just remember, we're recording Monday night. So there's going to be a couple that play Tuesday, which would be yesterday for our listeners. And then a lot that we're going to talk about that are going to be played today. So as you're listening to this, make sure you tune in later tonight to some big hitters.
100%. So as you're listening to this, you already know if F&M beat CNU in an upset. If they did, remember that we were just talking about F&M and how good, you know, and physical and tough their defense is. I think they have one of the best goalies in the country, 100%. Mm-hmm. Teddy Scarborough is a stud. He makes some saves in that York game that are, like, completely, like, you know, jaw-dropping. One sticks out to me where Gavin Gismondi, one of York's best shooters, gets to the middle of the field. Like, he hitches his guy and moves his feet, gets to the middle of the field, improves his angle, and shoots an offside high shot that Scarborough, again, like, coming back to that same point we made earlier, like, not just save it, but completely gobbles it up. Clean save, we're looking the other way, getting out in transition, or at least just, like, you know, getting into our clear. But 100% clean saves, that kid's a stud. And then offensively, they're pretty good. Ben Dale does a lot for him, a Providence transfer. And then they have these shooters that, like, work above it and, you know, really sling it with confidence. So an offense that on the right shooting day can really fill it up, and a defense that is pretty good, faceoff guy that's pretty good, and one of the best goalies in the country. So if CNU dominates, then I think that's a pretty significant statement. And if F&M, you know, is able to either keep it tight or win, I think that also is one more statement for F&M that says, like, hey, we are playing pretty good teams and we're right there with them. Look for us come Centennial play. We may be able to, you know, knock one of these teams off, end up with a decent NPI, or potentially fight for one of those, you know, coveted AQs and come away with a Centennial championship.
Yep. Yeah. For me, we talked about it earlier. I'm not, like, 100% sold on CNU at number two. I think they deserve to be there right now, but not completely sold on it. They come out and dominate this game, This would sell it for me. I would say, okay, I feel much more strongly about them being in that number two spot.
And then another one, as we're listening to this, is Grove City and Roanoke, two teams that in the rankings are probably in the, like, 20 to 25 range, but should be a fun game. And, you know, Roanoke is one that continues to try and track back to being a national contender. And under a first-year head coach, it's, you know, every step that you can take in the right direction is worthwhile. And so today, or tomorrow, excuse me, or as you're listening to this, last night against Grove City is one of those opportunities. And so it's exciting to see how that plays out as well. And if you're listening to this and Grove City won, like, you know, kudos to Grove City, another notch in the belt for a program that, you know, a few years ago, had the right person heard Grove City beat Roanoke, they'd have been shocked. You know, but again, at this point is a pretty intriguing matchup.
Yep. Love that one. Then tonight, Wednesday night, you talked about it here for the top 20 matchup, but RPI versus Middlebury. This is definitely one where if Middlebury comes out, plays solid, wins that, they could play their way into the top 20.
Yeah, I feel like it's a loser leaves, even though Middlebury is not there.
Yeah, but they would really leave at that
point. They're like knocking on the door, you know. Yeah, exactly. They're on the doorstep and they're trying to come into the party. And RPI is already in the house and opens the door and it's like rock, paper, scissors. There's only room for one of us, brother.
Yep. It's a one in, one out situation.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Someone's going out. Yeah.
All right, here we go. You're the bouncer. Okay. Middlebury shows up to the party and they're like, knocking on the door. And you think, like, all right, let's get Middlebury in here. And you look into the house, and the first team you see is RPI. And now it's like,
yep, and we're in they're conflict. Standing in the corner, maybe not mingling too much. I'm like, ooh, the vibes could be a little bit better if Murray was in
here. Let me grab him.
Yeah. You wait right here. I'll be right back. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And now there you are, you know, now we find out. There is conflict at afoot.
Yep. Well said. And then this weekend, we couple big bangers. One that sticks out for me is York Salisbury. I mean, a tale as old as time. Whenever I see these two matchups, I just think about our glorious 2016 CAC win that will live in infamy for forever. But a really tough spot for York to draw the Salisbury game right after the big loss, where Salisbury is going to be hungrier than ever. Do you see? What do you see here, Dan?
Yeah, they're going to be a hungry coaching staff and a roster of kids that are ready to get back into the win column. I went back and did a little bit of research on this. The last time that Salisbury lost back-to-back games in the regular season was in 2018, and it was after they lost to Gettysburg and then lost to OU. And it was in this exact weekend where they lost in the final weekend of February to Gettysburg and then the first weekend of March to OU. So perhaps there is something to that. It's also the same that they lost to Lynchburg in 21. There's something to it where it's this weekend. Salisbury comes out, dominates a handful of games early, then runs into a pretty good opponent that they are a little overconfident in themselves going into the matchup, hit a speed bump, and then refocus and go the rest of the way with, like, significant intentions and, like, national championship contention. So there's a little bit of a recipe there, or a little bit of a pattern, I should say. So maybe York has a shot.
Yeah, you know me. I'm always rooting for my Spartans, so.
And then you also have Denison at Lynchburg, so you have your boys at your other boys. I don't know what you're going to do.
I love them all there. I just hope both teams have fun in that game, to be honest with you.
Lynchburg's got to flip the script, right? Like, that was a big emotional high. Now you got to come down from it and refocus on a team that, you know, you just beat the number two team in the country, the 13-time national champions, and now Denison, who, you know, just
hungry for that big state win.
And is not ranked. You know, it's a totally different world. So you got to be that, you know, warrior that's just embracing every opportunity to be able to get onto the field, and it doesn't matter who your opponent is and all of those types of things. So you got to flip the script there if you're Lynchburg. And if you're Denison, it's like, what an opportunity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Looking to see some good fight out of them. I'm also excited about W&L Gettysburg. You know, Gettysburg definitely hungry for a strong win. W&L faltering a little bit here and there. Definitely haven't had that defiant win yet. So those two teams pitted against each other, I think, should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then the other one in the nightcap, and thank God for Stevenson and their commitment to playing night games, honestly.
Like, yeah.
I wouldn't know what I would do on Saturday nights without them. This weekend, I'll get Dickinson and Stevenson, 7 p.m. game. Last year, this is one that Stevenson actually won, so was part of that that Dickinson group of losses earlier in the year that were informative and kind of molded them into the team that they needed to become. And so now I think they hit this matchup with, you know, revenge right on the mind a little bit. Stevenson needs it. Stevenson is in a spot where, you know, you're pretty much entering like AQ or bust territory. Maybe you're already in it, depending on how NPI, all that type of stuff shakes out. And then, you know, in general, I think Stevenson's a team that thrives on confidence. So the fact that they beat him last year may actually pay a ton of dividends in this matchup. But in general, just excited to see how this one all plays out, and another opportunity to see Dickinson and see how they continue to evolve following that loss that they had earlier in the year to Stevens. So, yeah, just plenty of things to kind of continue to sort out and figure out. And Dickinson and Stevenson is a great data point for that.
Yep. Yep, well said. This week's going to be jam-packed. I'm going to be glued to the screen. I can't wait.
Glued to the screens here, people. All right. If you enjoyed what you heard here tonight, please be sure to share it with a friend. D3 loves you. We are brought to you by the Inside Lacrosse store. So if you are enjoying what you have heard, please head to insidethecross.com. Click on the side panel to pull up the menu. There's a link to the store. There are D3 Grit t-shirts, ILD3 Grit t-shirts. We would love if you are able to support us and support D3 content by purchasing one of those shirts. It's something that we would really appreciate and goes a long way towards supporting D3 coverage. We hope you are enjoying it so far this season. If you are new this season, you know, we hope you are really enjoying it. And if you are a historical listener who's been around for a long time, we always appreciate you coming back. So that said, we are off until next time. Big Dog, what you got for him?
Oh, great shirt. Great plug. Go buy one. They're awesome. But other than
anybody who buys an ILD3 Grit shirt and wears it to a game and takes a picture and sends it to us will be automatically retweeted and, you know, forever endeared into our hearts. So we appreciate everybody. We hope you are able to check this out, send it to a friend, and enjoyed what you heard today.
Yep. Love y'all.
Peace.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the spoil.